Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm Tom Colicchio, and this is Citizen Chef. I've been a working chef in New York City for close to 40 years now, and chefs, I think we all tend to gravitate towards anti-hunger organizations. I think, you know, for me personally, we feed a lot of people, and our restaurants are obviously, you know, a little more expensive than average, but I also really believe that food is a right, and everyone should have an access to healthy and affordable food. So I thought I knew a little bit about, you know, the issues of hunger in this country, and kind of thought I had a bit of an education around the issue. And then a couple of years back, 7 or 8 years ago, my wife was mentoring a young girl who family was living in a shelter. And it was clear that she was often hungry, and she would hang out and we'd have dinner. And we started sending food home. And we realized that we were just putting a Band-Aid on a problem, and that there was a bigger issue. And right away, we found out things that I really wasn't aware of. People aren't hungry in this country because of drought or war or famine. People are hungry because we don't have the political will to make sure everyone is fed. Clearly, there's enough food in this country. My wife decided to explore that, and she made a documentary film called A Place at the Table. So as we explored this issue and made the film, it really gave me an opportunity to sort of try to do whatever I could to help fight against hunger in this country. I co-founded an organization called Food Policy Action, and one of the things that we focused on was SNAP and making sure the program is as robust as possible. So I spent a good amount of time on the Hill meeting with congressional members to try to get them to either, you know, support the program and in some cases make sure there weren't cuts to the program.
Millions of Americans are about to lose everything that they've worked for and not be able to put food on the table, not to be able to take care of their families. This pandemic is not over. This is no time to tell the American people you're on your own.
One thing I just can't understand is how they could even show their faces by saying, food stamps, you want more money for food stamps? Why would we do that? Well, because people are hungry in America. Doesn't that motivate you?
We're trying to get Congress to increase the SNAP benefits by 15% because food prices are going up. And, you know, most people who are on SNAP, they'll tell you that their dollars run out 3/4 of the way through the month. That work goes on today. I mean, right now with COVID, so many more people are in need of SNAP. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps, is the main governmental program that puts dollars into the hands of people who are struggling to feed their families. The average person who receives SNAP has at least one member of the family working. So the idea that people are just not working and just living off the government is really not true. It's people who are working, but are working in jobs that are, you know, paying minimum wage, and they're struggling to make ends meet.
I think some of my, nutritionist friends act like food is merely a nutrition delivery system, like out of the Jetsons. where the only reason for low-income people to get food is some sort of nutrition pellet to meet their nutritional needs. And they totally deny the whole role of pleasure in eating.
Someone who I've really come to rely on is Joel Berger. Joel is the CEO of Hunger Free America and the author of America Can We Talk and All You Can Eat. Joel has been, you know, on the front lines fighting this fight for a long time. So if I'm going to the Hill to lobby around SNAP or WIC, I know I can call Joel and get information that I need.
Well, that's my rant for the day. I hope you enjoyed it. Stay in touch.
I also know I'm going to get a lot of wit and some dry humor in there as well. Joel, prior to COVID, there were 30 million Americans that were on SNAP. 30 million Americans are probably a little more, sort of every single day trying to figure out how they're going to put food on the table. Now, COVID, those numbers are way up. We're seeing as much as 70% in some states. And then on top of that, you have the issue that food prices are rising very quickly. People are getting hungrier in this country. We see the lines. We see people waiting in their cars for 3 hours to line up for a food bank to help feed their families. Just kind of give us an overview. You know, how did we get here and where are we going from here?
I apologize if you hear ambulances going by outside my window in Brooklyn. Unfortunately, that is the soundscape. But currently, the SNAP program is an entitlement. And I'm not going to relitigate whether Bill Clinton was right or wrong to sign the welfare reform bill in 1996. But I will point out that he vetoed two previous versions of the bill that would have ended SNAP as an entitlement, which meant would have ended SNAP's ability to increase when the economy gets bad. And so what SNAP did, because it is an entitlement, it nearly doubled in the few years following the 2008 economic collapse. And so if there are, let's say, 36 million people in SNAP, and the government's spending money on all those people, and the 36 millionth and first person is eligible for SNAP, applies, then the federal government is required by law to spend more money on them. So what that means is there is no possible way that you would be taking away food from someone who needs it more than you. And it's absolutely vital for people to know that if they get this benefit, they're not taking it away from someone else. And I tell the story in my first book. There was someone panhandling outside my house in Brooklyn about 10 years ago. And he said, I need money to feed myself. And I said, well, this isn't your lucky day, but I run an anti-hunger group. I can help you get, you know, food stamps, that was called at the time. And he said, I couldn't get those. And I go, why not? He goes, my family would be ashamed. I said, let me get this straight. You're less embarrassed and you think your family's less ashamed to get help from your neighbors, some of whom are non-wealthy, than you are to get your help from your very, very, very rich uncle called Uncle Sam. And he said, absolutely. And I think that's really unique to America, the politics of race and the politics of shaming that are very different than Europe. In Europe, most Europeans would probably be far more likely to willingly get help from their government than they would for their neighbors. And America, we're conned into believing somehow help for low-income people is somehow bad. And I point out, if you know, I'm riding a commercial jet with a few hundred people on it, and, you know, Jeff Bezos is riding a private jet with one person on it, we're both getting exactly the same help from government air traffic controllers, and yet he's getting essentially 300 times the help I am, because I'm getting help that's equally shared by 300 passengers, and he's getting that help himself. And so we have an awfully skewed way of how we define who's dependent on government and who's not.
People are stretching their dollars as much as they can, and it is somewhat restricted. You can't buy things like diapers, and you can't buy, you know, household cleaning supplies and things like that. It's only for food, and there are restrictions there.
It can't be used for alcohol. It can't be used for cigarettes. I agree with those restrictions. It can't even be used for toothpaste or diapers or feminine hygiene products. I may not agree with that, but I understand. And some even of my friends who think of themselves progressives want to demonize low-income people. All they're doing is buying soda with this. The most purchased product in America with SNAP are bananas. And the shopping patterns of people in SNAP are fairly close to other low-income people who just can't often afford the healthiest food.
You're not allowed to buy prepared foods. You can't go to a fast food restaurant and use SNAP. You can't buy a rotisserie chicken, at least a hot rotisserie chicken. You could buy a cold rotisserie chicken, but not a hot one.
Even though you would have to spend more money as a low-income person to buy and then heat up, you know, the cold chicken. And so again, it's really about discriminating against poor people and really sending the message they are somehow less worthy than everyone else. People haven't focused on it nearly as much as they have. And speaking of Paul Ryan, you know, after his one of his parents died, he received Social Security survivor's benefits, essentially a welfare payment. And Ben Carson, Trump's housing secretary, who's a big opponent of safety net programs, received food stamps growing up. All these people who have amnesia about all the help they got. And you know who doesn't want a lifetime on SNAP? SNAP recipients don't. Their dream isn't a bigger, better SNAP program. Their dream is having a living wage job so they don't need it.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
We're back. So today I'm here with Joel Berg. Joel, can you give us a bit of history on hunger in this country?
The reason America has so much hunger and had so much hunger even before this crisis is that our political system is fundamentally broken. And there are some, let's say, this isn't a political issue. This is the ultimate political issue. America almost ended hunger entirely in the 1970s because we had public policies that empowered unions to create middle-class jobs, wages went up, and we had an adequate government safety net to fill in the gaps when that wasn't enough. And the reason hunger has been skyrocketing over the last few decades is starting in the Reagan era, we started rolling back the policies that worked, rolling back living wage jobs, rolling back union protections, rolling back the safety net. So by 2018, in theoretically the best economy in decades, the stock market was skyrocketing through the roof. We had 37 million Americans, including 11 million American children, living in homes that couldn't afford enough food. And you know, a lot of people didn't want to hear it back in 2018, but we said, oh my goodness, if in a good economy, we have tens of millions of Americans going hungry. What's going to happen when we have the next inevitable recession? Now, even me with my Chicken Little mentality, as the Daily Show called me, Mr. Frowny Pants, even with my pessimism, even I didn't suspect that the next downturn would be this grave. So you had 37 million Americans who are hungry before this. Tens of millions of jobs went away. 29 million school meals a day, school lunches a day that would have been provided, half as many of those school lunches a day that would have been school breakfast that would have been provided went away. So 29 million kids getting school meals, no longer getting school meals by and large. Millions of kids in smaller kids in daycare centers that were getting meals at those daycare centers, no longer getting them. Hundreds of thousands of seniors getting meals at those senior centers, no longer getting them. And on top of that, we have a significant spike in food prices. Just read that there's an average of a 16% increase in food prices, and for some items, an even higher spike. So everything that could go wrong did go wrong, but most of this is not a consequence of the fact that we have this horrible virus. That certainly made this worse and was the precipitating spark. But the reason we have such a crisis now is we had a pretty serious crisis before. There were two things that really built the movement to end hunger in America. Number one was a serious grassroots movement started by Dr. King, the Poor People's Campaign, but continued after his death. A lot of people have been taught that, well, King started the Poor People's Campaign, it basically failed, he was assassinated, and that was that. That wasn't quite that. Led by Reverend Abernathy, who was really his co-leader in much of the civil rights movement, who's really been whitewashed, pun intended, out of the history, helped lead the Poor People's Movement. And one of their top demands was the creation of the modern nutrition assistance safety net. And that is part of what generated this massive media coverage. Not only did CBS, as you indicate, have a primetime special, 50 minutes, 50 minutes in prime time. So 1968 and 1969, there are a few dozen network news stories on hunger in America. You know, Dr. King said, what much does it profit a man to be able to eat at an integrated lunch counter if he can't afford a hamburger? Dr. King was pushing for the expansion of programs like food stamps and school breakfast. That's number one. And number two, the media didn't create this false equivalency. It said, the media then said, the reason we have this problem is that government isn't doing its job and the conservatives are opposing the expansion of the government nutrition safety net. And if we want to be serious about ending hunger, only government has the ability to do that. And so really, I think the only thing that's actually ever worked in all of American social history is a grassroots movement that is really fueled by the people most affected, but also convinces the rest of the country, including using the media, that it's in their self-interest and their moral interest to do something serious about this. And so Richard Nixon ran for president in 1968, basically denying hunger was a problem. My opponents are making this up just to embarrass me. And within a year, Nixon was so moved by the politics of the situation and the media of the situation, he was the first president and only president to hold a White House conference on hunger, and it resulted in very, very serious things. It laid down the predicate for the modern food stamp program. He created the WIC program, which helps pregnant women and children under five. Nixon, crook, and one of America's greatest hunger fighters. The biggest advances were in the late 60s and the mid 1970s. So the biggest advance was 1977, when I said Dole and McGovern and then President Carter teamed up to create what was really the modern food stamp program. Before that, it was really a small discount coupon program. And if you had literally no money in the bank, you couldn't afford the discount coupons and you got no food. And so we created this modern program who, you know, anyone who is really poor, you know, if you are a legal resident of the United States, you could get these benefits. And soon after that happened, people like Ronald Reagan started demonizing the program and frankly, very racially biased ways. He used the term young bucks on food stamps, which by anyone's account was a clear attempt to imply this was young, healthy African-American men who were getting food stamps, when in fact, throughout the program's existence, the largest number of people getting food stamps, and today the program's called SNAP, the largest number of people getting help are white. But that's not what the right wanted to give the country the impression of. And starting in the Reagan era, there were billions of dollars cuts in SNAP. A little of that was restored under the beginning of the Clinton administration, but then the welfare reform bill of 1996 cut them some more. You know, W had a mixed message on this, but then, you know, when Paul Ryan was in Congress, he spent virtually his entire time as Speaker and as Budget Committee Chair trying to slash these benefits. And now the Trump administration is continuing to do that as well. Out of all the cruel things the Trump administration have done or tried to do, perhaps the most amazing is that they are trying to say that if you don't work 20 hours or more Outside the home, they don't count raising children as work, at least for poor people. If you don't work 20 hours a week outside the home and document that, you shouldn't be able to get government food, you shouldn't be able to get government health care, you shouldn't be able to get government housing.
Never before, really, have I seen such a cruel and morally bankrupt budget. It dismantles our nation's basic living standards, which Americans have turned to for decades. This budget, and you know this, it will push millions of people into poverty and over the edge. I'd like to just ask you, how are people going to eat when they need a temporary helping hand with a cut of $190 million in food assistance? Then you add these onerous work requirements, and then yet you cut $1.3 billion in workforce training programs so people cannot be trained or retrained for jobs.
And so this was a crazy thing to do in good times. But now, in bad times, a federal judge put that rule on hold related to food and say, you know, we're in this unemployment crisis. It's sort of ridiculous to say you can't get food if you're not working. And the Trump administration actually went to court, spent our tax dollars to go to court to appeal this. So in the height of the worst economic collapse since the Depression, they're still trying to deny food from the unemployed. This is as if Ebenezer Scrooge had those nightmares. These ghosts came to him, scared the Dickens out of him, and then he still was out Dickensing in Dickens. So that's the long story of how these programs have been demonized. The vast majority of people getting help from these programs are working. They're just not earning enough money. And rather than doing the obvious thing is rewarding work by giving working people more food and by raising the minimum wage, they want a race bait to convince their base that somehow they shouldn't be too upset if they're losing food because those other people are being shafted even more.
And the first day of the month, supermarkets will tell you that people are lined up waiting for the doors to open up in a supermarket so people can go back in and shop because on the first of the month, that's when the EBT cards are replenished. So, you know, it's a program that works. It's also a program that has the least amount of fraud, waste, and abuse of any governmental program. And yet you'll hear people talk constantly about the fraud and abuse. Now, the only thing is you know, sometimes you'll hear incidents of people who sell their benefits. Well, they're doing that because, they're not selling it to buy drugs. They're selling it because they got to buy diapers and things like that that aren't included. But it's one of the lowest of any government program.
Well, Ms. Sullivan, let me allow you to address this issue of fraud. I think that this comes up repeatedly. Can you comment on this and, you know, Mr. Adolphson's comments in that regard, too?
Here's the thing. Nobody is going to deny that fraud or waste or abuse doesn't exist. It is next to minimal. But why are we focusing so much attention on that, especially when it is such a small portion? What we need to be focused on is families like mine who will be impacted. I am not a fraud. I work. I do everything that I can to provide the best, just like everybody in this room does. I want the best for my children, and feeding them healthy food is the foundation for them to build. That's what we need to be focused on, takes food from them.
I think there's a misconception that you want to be on SNAP aid. What's your response to that?
My response is I absolutely do not. There's so much shame associated with that. You know, again,
tell us about that. Why is there shame associated with
People will assume that because we're accessing programs that we are frauds because there are people that are out there spreading that type of misinformation. We become political footballs in this game. Our children, the most vulnerable, the least able to stand up and defend themselves, are essentially being told to do your part, you know, pay your way. Listen, I work. I happen to live in a state that is one of the most expensive in the country. Our energy costs are among the highest. We struggle, and we are hardly the only ones. We, the people that are being impacted, need to be in these spaces where these policies are being discussed so that we can take back the narrative about ourselves. We know who we are as people. We know our value in our communities and to our families. And it's time that we control that conversation and stop allowing people like this gentleman over here to my left to control that narrative about us.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, but when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.
So this idea that people are just, you know, misusing the system and they are on SNAP forever, it's just not true. And, you know, the other thing that you hear is when people are saying, well, people are online, they're buying, junk food, and are they buying lobsters and expensive meats with SNAP? That's typically not the case.
So there's family A and family B. They're both poor. They're both getting SNAP benefits, and they're both working, and they get what's called the earned income tax credit. It's a tax refund for working poor people. Family A puts that in the bank to save for their kids' college education. Family B buys a big screen TV. Now, I don't begrudge Family B the big screen TV. That might be the only entertainment they watch. Top Chef may also be their babysitter when then they're working. At least the kids can learn to cook. I don't begrudge them that. They probably don't have a movie theater in their neighborhood. If they do, they can't afford it. They may not have a safe public park. But so I don't begrudge Family B spending the money on a big screen TV. But right now, in many states, Family B, who spent the money, would get to keep their SNAP benefits, and Family A, who saved the money to be able to send their kid through college, would lose the benefits. And whether you're conservative, moderate, or progressive, that makes no sense as public policy whatsoever. But a lot of this isn't based on common sense. It's based on the notion that we want to punish poor people, and anything that seems too luxurious, you shouldn't be able to get SNAP. It'd be too luxurious to be able to have $2,100 in the bank and still get SNAP.
If you think that feeding people in this country that are hungry, if you think it's important, then that's one question that I would ask someone who's running for Congress or someone who's running for a higher office, you know, if that's something they would support, if that's something that you care about. You know, again, these are the questions that you need to ask people before they're elected into office. And then you hold their feet to the fire once they're there. And so if you listen to this episode and you decide this is something you really care about, and for all the reasons that we're talking about, then I think it's more than fair to ask that question. If you have access to someone before you vote for them, and ask that question. Go on their websites and see if they have anything about SNAP or any other programs that they think would help people in need.
Now, a bill that's being considered by the House of Representatives in May of this year was saying that we should waive those requirements during the pandemic. We'll see if that happens. The other restriction is that most places in most parts of the United States, as you know, Tom, you cannot use SNAP at restaurants. Now, not every restaurant in every neighborhood would be a good candidate to accept SNAP, but many would be. So there's a very small pilot project that only a few states have that only allow a few parts of those states and only a few populations, people with disabilities, senior citizens, and homeless people, to use SNAP in certain limited, you know, restaurants. I do think that should be expanded. And as you've been leading the way to have broader, really, payments to the restaurant industry to keep workers employed and to make sure that you can pay your suppliers and rent and all those other things. I think that makes sense. And so allowing restaurants to accept SNAP is not the end all or the be all of the problems besetting the restaurant industry, but it surely would help. And it would surely help low-income people to have more options.
I thought it was important that if we were going to discuss the issue of hunger, that Joel would be the perfect person to talk to.
Thank you, Tom, for having me on, and thank you for all you and your family have done to fight against hunger and to build more just, sustainable food systems.
I want to thank our guests and Kristen Castry and Lori Silverbush at A Place at the Table. Citizen Chef with me, Tom Colicchio, is a production of iHeartMedia. Christopher Hasiotis is our executive producer. Jesslyn Shield is our researcher. And Gabrielle Collins is our producer and editor. Now, make sure to subscribe and leave a rating on our show. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
It's the Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yemi's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever. Believe that.
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know, that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to The Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat. Columbus's real hip-hop and R&B.